Hey, this is Ash from All Things Dentistry, the place where we're passionate about, well, you know what, teeth and all things kind of surrounding teeth, I guess. If you're new here, this podcast is really just me rambling on about things that happen in a daily practice that I don't post on YouTube, but I really want to share because I think there's a lot of learning, or just kind of it helps me walk through a bunch of things that happen through the week. So, can't even remember where I left off, but let's dive into my buddy, Stu. So, last time I think I talked about Stu, he had a buccal abscess on his lower left, his left mandible, from tooth number 3-5, if I recall. And subsequently, he's had the tooth extracted, not by myself, but by somebody else. And he had ipsilateral lip numbness. So his lower left lip was numb, chin was numb on that left side. So we prescribed some antibiotics, amoxicillin, TID, 500 milligrams times 7 days, and slowly it decreased. It decreased in terms of size of swelling for a couple days, and then he was able to get the tooth extracted about 4 days later. And what's super interesting, and I think about this because this is the foreshadowing into the later part of the podcast. I have very similar situation with very different kind of symptoms. I'm trying to get better at, like, in making my YouTube videos. I'll be honest, some people always like, but stick around to the end till you hear, you know, whatever, and that gives you that kind of like little carrot. I can never do that. I'm just like, hey, I'm just grateful you're hanging out. And that's the same with here. So with Stu, he had his tooth extracted. He had lip numbness and kind of chin numbness, and his lip numbness slowly went away. But the dentist had said, you know, you may never get, or it may take time, or you may never get chin numbness back, or chin numbness go away. I'm trying to say that. So it may be numb forever. And that worried him, actually. That was interesting. I'm like, interesting. And actually, Stu was reading all the instructions, the post-operative instructions, which actually, because he lives with me, and I was like, that's interesting. Patients actually read these things. And he was actually abiding by the instructions that the dentist gave him. And I was, again, shocked. Like, interesting. You're a male, and I would just assume you didn't read anything, like me. So, yeah. So he's 3 days post-operative, still has a little bit of numbness on his chin, just literally below the lip. And so he's worried about it, but I'm like, Stu, you just had a large infection, give it time, it's healing, swelling. So hopefully by the next time I podcast, that'll be gone. It was very interesting just to see how you had lip numbness from that swelling. Very interesting. So tooth is extracted, he's better, he looks better, feels better. And then I think, so last week, last Friday was really interesting. So had a patient, I can't remember if I talked about this. If I did, I apologize. It was a case of the patient had a pulpectomy, tooth number 2-7, second maxillomolar, upper left. Tooth had a pulpectomy 4 days before and presented back for, it was referred to me, but I hadn't had a chance to see the patient. And came back to the clinic with emergency pain and couldn't sleep that night. It was an extreme amount of pain the night before. So I'm like, it's interesting. I wonder what the cause is, because pulpectomy was done. I'm like, okay, sure, let's dive in here. So we elected to finish the case, that sitting. So the patient had spontaneous pain the night before, waking pain, and actually the day before a little bit too. But when he presented to me, there was obviously no cold sensitivity, no palpation pain, but percussion pain was like 5 pluses, super painful. So we numb the patient up, go ahead and dive in there. And the pulpectomy that was done was really good. Like it was not a stabectomy. It was a solid pulpectomy. All the canals were instrumented to a primary, 3 canals, mesiobuccal, palate, distal buccal, and I was really shocked. I'm like, this is weird. Like, usually that type of pain, I don't get it. So I sat and thought about it for a while as I'm fiddling away, and the clinician had said that they couldn't get down the distal buccal, and they took a post-operative radiograph. I was like, okay, well, whatever. I'm expecting it to be ledged or blocked. And I cleaned and shaped everything to, like, palate was a 45, easy buccal, and distal was a 35-06. And I could not get past that ledge. And like, well, it is what it is. As I'm doing all of this, so I've cleaned and shaped everything, I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to, those are weird symptoms that this patient's having. That sounds like there's, you know, another canal missed, or and there's no debris anywhere, like apical tissue. So I take a look and I start troughing for MB2 in the most random place, well, a normal spot, but, and sure as hell, there's MB2. I mean, had I not had 25 years of doing this, had I not had just that experience of having pain, patient pain before, I probably would not have looked for it, because it was looked pretty clear that it was not present at all, not even close. But slowly troughing just in the mesial buccal canal towards the palate, unveiled this crazy MB2. I was so shocked. I'm like, well, that probably is the reason why you're having pain. So I did my cone fit. I couldn't get any past that blockage or that ledge. So I'm like, ah, forget it. So I take a cone fit, and sure as hell enough, there's a fractured hand file in that distal buccal. And if you look at the pre-op closer, you can actually see it. It's a tiny little piece that looks exactly like a trabeculae from bone. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes way more sense. So the question I ask myself is, does it even matter? And I have no idea. So we finish the case, text the patient the next day. It's good to go, which is really good to hear. But what we'll do is we'll follow up in 6 months and see if we're getting some sort of lesion from that distal buccal. I'm not sure. Talked to the patient, told them what the situation is. So, but I think what it was, it's the end of a 15 file, just cranked in there. And it was trying to go around a 90 degree bend. So that makes way more sense why it broke. So carry on to the next patient, was another emergency patient that needed a pulpectomy, but we couldn't figure out which tooth it was. And the patient was certain it was the second left maxillary molar. So we did all of the endo testing up top and bottom, and it looked like the second molar was the issue. Everything has large restorations, very difficult to figure out. So we started the pulpectomy, but I told the patient, this is 99% sure this is the tooth that needs the endo. There's a 1% chance, because I'm going on your symptoms, everything's responding, because the patient had very similar symptoms to the patient before. Up at night, hot and cold sensitivity, could not sleep, just aching pain. I'm like, okay, well, and I could not get anything to respond, but I'm like, he was really worried, didn't want to go back through that. So I'm like, okay, I mean, we can start the root canal on that 2-7, but it may be something else. I'm forewarning you. And he's like, no, let's do it. So we did the pulpectomy, found three main canals. Found three. You know what? So that's the thing about doing this podcast. Listen to this. So he then messaged him. He said, oh, he's in a lot of pain still. I'm like, huh. 2 days later, the pain restarted, hot and cold sensitivity. And as I was thinking, I'm like, well, maybe we got a different tooth. But the thing is that I didn't find MB2. I was just running out of time, so we're just going to do the three main canals. And that actually might be the issue. So because he had pain relief for the first night, he said he slept for like a really long time. He was so tired. And then pain started to come back the night later. So I'm going to replay that video and kind of track to see... kind of take a look at the pulpectomy. That's the beauty of videoing everything, is that I can take a look and think about it. Apologize, I'm actually literally reevaluating the progress as I'm doing this podcast. That's really funny. But I was expecting it to be a lower tooth. And the reason why I'm saying that is because the patient had said, now I think it's my lower tooth, of which there's always a probability of that. Okay, sorry, I got cut off there. And so the patient had texted me that they're having pain in the lower left teeth. So I'm going to, when we see the patient, I'm going to reevaluate, and it actually might be MB2 on the 2/7. So, maybe it's not another tooth. It might be just referred pain from the 2/7 back downstairs. Very interesting, and that is the thing with teeth. And, some days, most of the time you get them, sometimes it's very unclear. And, you know, what's really interesting is that there's another case that I literally just finished. As I was talking about that case with having, I got to look for MB2, there was another case literally of an upper 7. I don't know, this past week has been upper 7s. On the right side, patient came in for a pulpectomy about a month ago, and the buccal canals, if you did not have high magnification, the buccal canals look like one canal. But there were two, and I actually cleaned and shaped, and I've been wanting to post this case online. I just can't seem to get the time where the paper point, so I cleaned and shaped to a primary 2507, and then I go ahead and take my paper points, place it into the buccal canal, because at this point I think there's only two, like a palatal canal and a buccal canal. I place my paper point in, and boom, it's bleeding. I'm like, oh, okay, I know what this is. And actually, it's a great tip. So if you can visualize this, the paper point actually was bleeding, if you pull it out, with only on one side of the paper point. And that typically indicates one of two things. First one, remaining pulp tissue. Second one, strip perf. So you pick your one, pick which scenario you would prefer. I'm going to say that 99.7% of you would prefer the missed canal versus the strip perf, but never know. So that gave me the idea, like, okay, I know what's going on here. So I just took my wave on gold, kind of angled, bent it, placed it in kind of where I thought the MB orifice would be, and boom, down it went, and removed all that pulp tissue. So the thing that's a little more complicated in this case is now I think about it, I could not find MB. Oh, no, I did. All right. No, I did find MB2. So I was lying in my head to you. So my apologies. I could not figure out if those... I could figure out if the canals joined, but during my cone fit, I was like, ooh, hopefully this is okay. I don't have a cone beam. There's just not enough time between start and finish of the case. But the two buccal canals join. And, you know, what's going through my mind as I'm doing the procedure is like, okay, where's MB2? And I look everywhere, and there's no indicator whatsoever. Like the whole, it's, you know, if you think the pulpal floor right now, imagine, visualize the bottom of a really, you know, one of those home pools in the really nice in-ground pool that's, there's no corners, it's all kind of rounded, you know, that, and there's nowhere for any dirt to collect in any corner. That's really what this pulpal floor looked like. It was just nice and flowing. I felt like I wanted to dive in there and go for a little swim too. So everything's nice and flowing. I'm just like, I do not see anything where I could go start troughing and actually find something. So as I was drawing the canals with my paper point, I saw with my little eye, I saw with my tiny eye, I saw with my, I can't remember that. I saw with my eye, whatever that little thing is that we said as kids, a fin in the mesial part of the MB canal about 3 mils below the orifice. So I take my file and try to wedge it in there. And sure enough, I think that that's where MB2 was. I'm going to say that anyways. And considering the patient's symptoms were completely gone between the pulpectomy and the appointment we're finishing, I'm going to assume that MB2 was part of MB1. It was just a little fin that kind of scooted off at the orifice. So when I see that, I'm just like, wow, sweet. I think we got everything. It just kind of boosts my confidence a little bit. So we finished that case, took my final periapical radiograph. I'm like, oh, okay, perfect. Everything, Everything worked out. I opened both canals. So MB1 joined the distal buccal, or whatever you want to say. Both buccal canals joined. I opened that orifice up to actually a 4505. And I opened the palate up to a 4505. And boom. We're set. So I think that one's, I think we're good there. And then the last case I want to talk about, I'm super grateful you're here to this point, was today. So, like Stu, I thought about this. I was talking with Stu's son just literally before I started podcasting. It's like, you know, your dad, it's very unique because normally patients presenting with a swelling, an odontogenic abscess, 9 times out of 10, they present with pain to that abscess. Not just like, hey, I have a swelling. Usually there's a lot of pain, like a significant amount of pain. So it's really interesting because I had a patient, we had to move, I mean, just like your schedule, we had to move patients around and try to make this emergency fit. But this is kind of, I mean, slightly interesting, but it reconfirms, I think, I'm trying to get this message out, especially on our advanced course. What I see time and time again is that, and it takes 20 years, takes five to 20 years for this to propagate as a problem, is that when a patient, as a kid, breaks their front tooth, they have the endo done. The endo's not done well. It's not obturated well. But I know what it's like to work on kids, and especially in a busy practice. You know, I mean, if they're jumping around and the patient's in a lot of pain, you know, just finishing short and getting the hell out of there, I completely get it. Now, is it wrong? Yes, I'll say it's wrong. But patient management is another huge issue that black and white x-ray does not talk about. So I completely empathize with the scenario that's I'm hypothesizing that's going on. So the patient that rolled into my chair this morning presented with 8 out of 10 pain, was up all night to his front lip, underneath his orbital, right orbit, lots of pain. And so upon further investigation, he has a periapical lesion on tooth number 1-1. So the right central maxillary incisor, let's get it right. And then the lesion's been there for, and he said he had that root canal 20 years ago. And I think the radiograph makes the obturation look short, but the radiograph is, the root is also resorbed. So I think what happened was short cleaning shapings upon trauma. Patient went, got the root canal done, cleaned and shaped short, obturated short, apical part necrosed, started getting a lesion, and got resorption of the root. Well, that's fine. It happens. We've got like 2 to 3 mils of resorption, and that's that. But we have this periapical abscess, we used to call it a phoenix abscess, if you know what I'm talking about. So kind of like rising from the ashes. So this tooth has been fine for years. I mean, this lesion's probably been there for a decade. And all of a sudden one day, boom, decided to switch over to the dark side and become painful. So this case, and I was thinking about earlier, you know, each one of these cases can be very different to tackle. Especially when there's pain and there's pus, an abscess. So in this case, what I like to do is just literally go through the tooth, regular access, remove the guttapercha, which I was so grateful I could easily just use a head shrim, pull it out in a few pieces, and then boom, like as soon as the apical plug of that guttapercha came out, it's probably like a 2 mil plug, that was remaining after slowly chipped away at the more coronal stuff with a head shrim file, pus filled that canal. It was like, boom. And then I was like, oh. So I started pushing on the lip and the patient started feeling pain and he was okay with it. So I started just to try to flush as much of that pus out of there. And then, everything seemed to go pretty smoothly, actually. I was able to really numb the patient up as compared to a pulpectomy with an acute apical abscess about 7 weeks ago. I could not get the patient numb, or I did get them numb, but the second I took sodium hypochlorite into the canal, the patient was in extreme pain. We're talking like just in the orifice. never mind extruding it. I mean, it was crazy. Of course, this is a dental assistant. So, and I did this two times to this poor lady where pain was starting to come back, like 8 out of 10 pain. I'm like, okay, we'll numb you up, clean and shape. I mean, I couldn't even get files downrange. It was crazy. And I was almost worried that I perfed. I hadn't. It's just so nuts. So this patient was able to numb up amazingly well, cleaned out all the pus. I've actually put the vacuum in there on a BC sealer tip for about in the suction for about 2 to 3 minutes just to keep it kept draining. And then once we had it dried, I elected not to rinse out with sodium hypochlorite again because I figured it just induce apical bleeding. Because in this case, what I'm trying to do is get calcium hydroxide all the way to that portal of exit to block out any of, essentially acting like a block out to prevent any pus or separation serum and a clear fluid from getting into the canal and just staying there. So one of the tips I actually read in an article was using electrol spiral and placing calcium hydroxide about 3 millimeters from the tip, from the apical part, and then spinning the electrol spiral at 1,000 RPM, and then keeping it about 3 millimeters back. And that seemed to work out well every time I've done that. I don't do it on any other cases other than large, wide open cases, so I don't fracture the damn thing. And then I was able to get the calcium hydroxide all the way down to that portal of exit, and then seal it up. And I texted the patient about 3 or 4 hours later, and he said it was pain is gone. It's actually no pain. So that's amazing. I'm actually shocked a lot of the time when these things work. Anyways, that is the end of my rambling. Thank you so much for being here. I'm super grateful you're part of this little podcast journey with me, and talk to you soon. Cheers.